Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The Films, The Day After Trinity, The Deepest Breath, and Talk to Me.
I'd like to talk about three films today. Two of them are documentaries, and the third is very, very fictional. But let's start off on the nonfiction department. The Day After Trinity, I'd like to talk about. This is a movie which is actually made way back in 1981. But it's very much present now. It's been streaming, and a lot of people have been looking at it because it is about J. Robert Oppenheimer. And, of course, Christopher Nolan's new film, Oppenheimer, is about J. Robert Oppenheimer. And I think that Chris Nolan's film is sort of okay, perfectly good, nothing great. I talked about that in an earlier show. The Day After Trinity is the documentary version of all this. It does not have actors doing things. It has the real people, some of the real people. We only see a little bit of Oppenheimer himself. He doesn't seem to have been filmed an awful lot during his active years, but we see him a little bit in the latter part of this documentary. But of course, the title, The Day After Trinity, refers to the first great atomic bomb test, which Oppenheimer named Trinity. And The Day After Trinity, of course, refers to all the things that happened after that first atomic bomb test. But what we have here is a much more thoroughly linear account of how the first atomic bomb was developed and about the building of the Los Alamos Laboratory in New Mexico and all of that stuff. So we have a little bit about J. Robert Oppenheimer's background in this movie, this documentary. And then we have about him finally getting, as a very young man, still in his 30s, getting appointed to put together this highly secret laboratory in Los Alamos, New Mexico, to develop the first atomic weapon, if in fact they could pull that off, if they could make it happen. And we see the building of the little community and how more and more people were sent there and all the secrecy involved. And of course, the Chris Nolan movie gets into some of this stuff a bit. But this film, this documentary really spells it out. Absolutely everything was secret. And by the way, people in New Mexico, in this tiny little town nearby where Los Alamos was being built, didn't know why all these people were getting off the train at their tiny little station and going off into the desert. It was sort of a mystery to people. And rather amusingly, a couple of the most famous people involved showed up with pseudonyms during the early stages of the setting up of Los Alamos, Mr. Smith and Mr. Jones, which was quite hilarious to some of the people who were setting up, because a lot of these people were advanced physics students, and they saw their pictures. They saw the pictures of these highly placed senior physicists in their textbooks and whatnot all the time. So the idea they were trying to pass themselves off as a Mr. Smith and Mr. Jones was sort of funny. Anyway, there are funny little things like that in the movie. I think I actually laughed a few more times watching this documentary than I did while watching the feature film Oppenheimer. In any case, of course, they built their little community and all these scientists came in, and after a while things were running smoothly and they had to get a hold of all of the nuclear fuel that they needed, which was extremely rare at the time. So they had to accumulate this, and eventually they were able to start real testing. And then of course they had the famous Trinity test. And then of course after that, and that happens somewhere around the middle of this documentary, after that, of course, comes the decision of the president, Harry S. Truman, to drop not one but two bombs onto actual cities in Japan. And the best thing about the documentary, The Day After Trinity, aside from the documentary glimpses we get of some real people on film, is that we really get a very, very thorough going over of the moral questions. These are addressed in the feature film Oppenheimer, but they are are not really gone into. And even though this documentary is only roughly an hour and a half long, it really goes into these things somewhat more. And Oppenheimer's tremendous feelings of the misgivings after the bombs were dropped, and the feeling that he had blood on his hands and so forth and so on. All of this is really covered very nicely in the movie. So as I've said, we really get good glimpses of people, only a few glimpses of Oppenheimer on film, but some of his brothers are in the movie, again, which comes back from 1981. A lot of people who are no longer alive were alive then and could talk about it. Very important physicists like Hans Bethe, and then there's all kinds of archival photographs and things like that. So it's a good, solid documentary. And of course, the feature film Oppenheimer jumps around in time a lot, and it tries to make its story as dramatic as possible. The Day After Trinity is not after drama, but drama comes out of it simply because of the subject matter. It's really a remarkable thing to be thinking about in this current day and age, when, of course, the threat of atomic weapons still looms over us, even though we don't think about it so much these days. And my gosh, the things are powerful. One of the moments I most enjoyed in The Day After Trinity was there's a part of it where people who lived in the area are describing what they witnessed on the day of the big atomic test out in the desert in New Mexico. And they tell about, oh my gosh, the sound was tremendous and the light was tremendous. And this one woman says, my sister commented on how bright the light was. And the interviewer says, well, was that an unusual comment for her to make? And the woman says, yes, she was blind. So that is how bright that light was, and that was how powerful that bomb was, even during the testing stages of the whole thing. So anyway, The Day After Trinity, a really, really worthwhile documentary. It's very easy to find streaming these days. I believe the Criterion Channel is screening it outside its paywall, and I'm sure it's findable elsewhere. A good, solid movie that gives you some real looks at some of the real people, and a very just linear and orderly account of the developing of the first atomic weapons. And also talks a bit about the non-development of the hydrogen bomb followed by the development of the hydrogen bomb, another very interesting topic. So highly recommended, The Day After Trinity from 1981. Good documentary. Now, the other documentary that I would like to talk about is a brand new documentary, and it is called The Deepest Breath. And this is a movie about diving, not diving off diving boards and not scuba diving. This is about free diving. That is the whole topic of this. And just as there is free climbing with mountain climbers who climb without any ropes or other apparatus, these are divers who dive down, 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 deep under the sea, or maybe it's in a pool, to stay underwater for a really long time. Now, you know, in itself, this always seems to me to be not a very cinematic subject. Many years ago, there was a European movie called The Big Blue, which was about people who do this. And I found it quite a dull movie. And a friend of mine coming out of the screening said, what a cinematic subject, people holding their breath. Well, this movie, The Deepest Breath, does make holding your breath into somewhat of a cinematic subject, because there are some tremendous images in this movie. So, okay. What we have here, we deal with just a few of these free divers, and it focuses mainly on an Italian free diver named Alessia Zecchini, and her ambition in life from when she's a little girl is to become a really great free diver, to hold her breath for a really long time, to go down, down, down into the depths of the water. That was her dream as a little girl, and she stuck by it. And even though at one point in Italy they decided that people under 18 were not allowed to do this anymore, not allowed to train for this anymore, she just bided her time and did her own training on her own by herself. And when she turned 18, jumped right back in again. That was about 4 years she had to do that. But then she got big, and she did. She became a tremendous champion. And there are other people that the movie deals with too. There's a Russian who had been the greatest champion before Alessia Zecchini came along. And there's a Japanese woman who becomes her big rival, although they're also very close friends. So we have these different divers. And we find out about the different modes of this this free diving. For example, you can do it in a swimming pool. You can just do it by being underwater and just swimming back and forth from one end of the pool to the other. And that's one way you can go about it and set records and all that. But what this movie spends most of its time on is doing it in the ocean. And there you are going way, way down into the depths of the actual sea. And apparently the way they usually do it is there's a rope. and they are allowed to pull themselves down the rope, and they go down, down, and they have a weight, which they're usually holding in their hands because they won't want it when they start to go up again. And they go way, way down, and down there, way down underneath, there have been placed by divers with gear, with scuba gear and so forth, there are some little tokens. And the diver has to get way down to the bottom and take one of these to demonstrate having actually been down there and then go back up again. So that's the basic drill. You go way, way down along this rope, and then you finally get way, way down there, and you pick up your little card, and then you go way back up again. The thing is that you're just holding your breath all this time. So you have a 2-minute dive, 2.5-minute dives, maybe a 3-minute dive. My gosh, it's amazing. Hard for me to even imagine doing that sort of thing. But when you get near the surface, you are then in danger of blacking out. So there are also what they call safety divers, and they are right up near the surface, and they are also free divers. They're just holding their breaths as well. They may have little snorkels on, but not scuba gear and so forth. And so if you black out when you're getting near the top, they're there to grab you and pull you up and try to resuscitate you. And when you get up above the surface, you have to say, "I'm okay." And then it's decided that the dive was official, and then the judges decide whether it was a really clean dive, whether there were any glitches or snafus along the way, and that sort of thing. So all of this is spelled out in the movie, and it's really quite fascinating. And I will say that there are some very hair-raising moments, because there are some times when people are really, really just barely survive one of these really deep dives. Most of the tone of the movie is pretty triumphant. It's about excellent divers, but there's danger for all of them. Apparently, some of the places where they do this diving, the mortality rate is like that of Mount Everest when people would climb that, you know, in the earlier days. Really, really, it's dangerous stuff. And the other main character in this movie is Stephen Keenan, a safety diver who also becomes Alessia Zucchini's romantic partner. And they are the greatest of friends and the greatest of lovers, and also a tremendous team, with her doing the diving and him being the coach and a safety diver. There's some amazing footage of people way down under the sea in this movie. It's gorgeous to look at. Just as a visual cinematic experience, I totally recommend it. And you'll learn a whole lot about free diving. So I really enjoyed it, and I recommend it. I will say that there are times when it gets much too sentimental when it's dealing especially with people who lost their lives or didn't quite survive. And I could have used some less of that. But let's say at least a third of the deepest breath is absolutely transfixing, and I recommend it. Now for our fictional movie of the day, and it is a horror movie. And as I said before, it is extremely fictional. Talk to Me is what it is called. It's an Australian movie directed by a couple of Australian brothers, Danny Filippu and Michael Filippu, and it is one of these movies about possession, sort of demonic possession. So here we have a whole bunch of young people, a bunch of young friends, teenagers, young adults. Our main character is a young woman whose mother recently died, and she is still getting over that, and she's really not happy at all, and so that's sort of the tone at the beginning of the movie. But then she just decides she really ought to be spending more time with her friends and getting herself out of the dumps and out of the doldrums. And she goes to a party with a bunch of her friends. And oh my gosh, one of them has brought along an embalmed hand. According to the lore that they've picked up, it apparently once belonged to, they say maybe it was a medium, maybe it was a psychic. They don't seem to know the difference between these different kinds of things. They're just young people who are just having fun. But they do have this embalmed hand. And it turns out that if you hold it like you're shaking hands with it, and you say certain things, you will then get a vision of a spirit, of a ghost, of some kind of a demon or something. And then if you say, "I let you in," it will come in and it will maybe take you over for a little while. And the idea is you shouldn't let this last more than a minute and a half. By then, like the safety divers in the free diving movie, your friends have to get your hand off of that embalmed hand so that you come back to the world of the living and are no longer possessed by the demon. Of course, there turns out to be some demonic possession that goes on here, which turns out to be pretty hard to get away from. As they always say about politics, it's not the crime that gets you, it's the cover-up most of the time. Here, it's not inviting the demon in, it's getting rid of the demon again that turns out to be the hard part. And of course, That's where most of the drama of the film comes from. Talk to Me begins with a scene of incredible horror. It's really abrupt. It comes out of nowhere because it's the very first minutes of the film, and it'll really jolt you and your eyes will pop and all of that. It's pretty effectively done. And this turns out to be the sort of the backdrop to the main character, Mia, to her mother being dead and her trying so hard to get over this. After that opening jolt, the movie lightens up a little bit. It's not that intense all the way through. It does have some intense moments here and there, and it's a reasonably effective horror movie. So that has got to be my bottom line on the film. It's reasonably effective. It's well acted. Sophia Wilde is very good as our main character, Mia. There are a few good actors in the supporting cast, and the movie is reasonably intelligent as sort of jump scare horror movies go. A lot of people are talking it up as being one of the great horror movies of recent times. I totally disagree with that. I think it's a pretty good horror movie. So if you like movies like Hereditary or Midsommar or some of the other fairly recent horror films, this one's not quite up to that level, but it's not bad at all, and it didn't really send me. It didn't really get my blood pumping really hard. But again, there were some moments here and there along the way where I found it a little bit thrilling. So if you really like horror movies, then watch Talk to Me. If you don't really like horror movies, maybe wait for the next one to come along and possess you. So that is my partly fictional, partly non-fictional story this week.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, The Films, The Day After Trinity, The Deepest Breath, and Talk to Me.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.